Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, William Liu. I am joined by Raptors 905 sideline reporter and host of Raptors Today, and most importantly, a friend of the program, Savannah Hamilton. Savannah, how you doing?
I'm good, Will. Glad to be a friend of the program.
You are definitely one of the, I would say probably like five or six, you know, people in this exclusive club. So congratulations. And yeah, we're here mostly to talk about the Raptors, who unfortunately had their six-game win streak snapped last night. But after waking up the next morning and even in the moment after the game, I was thinking about it and I was like, that's one of those losses that you're just not mad at, period. I mean, like, yes, there were a couple of things the Raptors could have done better that could have gotten them to win, and they could be on a seven-game win streak and we could all be like thrilled. But I think for me, I felt okay about that game and how the way the Raptors competed. What were your feelings after last night's game where the Raptors lose 99-95 against the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah, you know, that was one of those losses that if you're going to lose, that's the team you want to lose to. And they didn't really have, you know, much players out themselves. So, you know, like we had arguably a full strength, pretty much Suns team, and a close to full strength Toronto Raptors team. And so if you're measuring these both teams together, it's like, okay, the Raptors are literally 4 points behind the Suns. It was a competitive game. Was there things that they can improve and learn from? Absolutely. So it was one of those games where I'm like, yeah, if you're going to lose your win streak, you better lose it to one of the best teams in the NBA right now. And, you know, Phoenix Suns, you know, that's a good team.
That's a really good team. You know, they have kind of all the pieces working. I mean, they got 31 wins already. It's pretty absurd, right? So definitely no shame in losing that game. Having said that, though, there were a couple of items that, you know, of course, if the Raptors shot the three at a respectable level, that's where I got to disagree with you. I think Gary and Scotty were pretty noticeable absences for the team when you look at the fact that, you know, they shot 8 of 37 from three. Gary probably would have helped that number not look so bad. And, you know, the Raptors also missed a whole bunch of free throws, and that was real tricky. But I wanted to focus on Fred VanVleet because it was real interesting. Monty Williams was talking before the game, and he was speaking about Fred, who was just coming off of Player of the Week. And he said Fred was playing as well as anybody in the league. And, of course, that does make sense when you consider the fact that he won Player of the Week. But he was also just really truthful in that statement because of the fact that the way the Suns guarded Fred last night was the way that superstars in the league would be guarded, would be the way that Steph is guarded, you know, Trae Young, Dame Lillard, those types of guards. That's the kind of attention those guys get. And that's the treatment Fred got last night. What did you make of how the Suns guarded Fred in particular and sort of what that speaks to his position in the game right now?
First of all, you're right. He got Player of the Week. That's some haterade coming through, I think, a little bit from Monte Williams there. But, you know, you're right in the fact that they had his number. And there's going to be some teams that guard certain players better than other teams. And the Suns, they know what they're doing. And they're, you know, they're a guard-focused team anyway. So they can lock down players like Fred VanVleet. You know, it's harder, as we saw, like, players like Pascal or even Chris Boucher, who had an impact on the defensive end, to combat them. But, you know, with Fred VanVleet playing so well, we also have to keep in mind that a lot of the attention has been on him because he got that accolade and just the way he's been playing down this last couple stretches. Before, maybe they would have focused more on Pascal or OG or even Scotty if he was there. But now that you have to allocate all your resources to this quote-unquote, you know, all-star player that's coming up for the Raptors, of course, if you're the Suns, you're like, oh, all-star, like, we'll show him what's good. We're going to lock him down. He has to earn those stripes. And in all fairness, they did. Like, they had his number. He didn't have the best game. He shot, like, what, 7 for 18 from the field, 4 for 10. Even 4 for 10 is not even that bad, but, like, 7 for 18 altogether when we're used to him shooting a higher percentage than that and also scoring, you know, in the 30-plus range. he still had 21 points in the game, but it just was, it just didn't come as effective as we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and look, the Suns did a lot of things in terms of just like they put their best wing defender on him, right? They didn't have Chris Paul guarding Fred. They had as the primary assignment, it was Mikal Bridges, who, you know, 6'8", 7 foot wingspan, like really skinny, able to get around screens. Like he, so they were already showing him that respect because that's the kind of guy that they would put on like the best players on every single night. And then on top of that, they were showing really high in the pick and roll. They were coming out to meet Fred, refusing to let him shoot the three. And he still got 10 threes off. But it right now, with the way Fred is shooting, 10 threes when he plays 44 minutes is actually a really good job defensively with the way Phoenix was guarding him. And then the other thing is just it just did such a good job of closing out. It felt like whenever Fred would have a little bit of space come off a high screen, a third defender would run over. Like, it's like, forget who else is on the floor. We need to get Fred to get rid of the ball right here. And they were able to close out on him effectively, force him inside the arc. And is this kind of the game plan we're going to see from teams? Is this like what Fred's going to have to deal with going forward? Obviously the Suns are like one of the best teams in the NBA, if not the best team in the NBA, but are teams going to be replicating the strategy against Fred? And if so, like, what are some of the things Fred can do to counter it? And also what are some of the things that teammates can do to help, you know, capitalize on the fact that he's drawing sometimes three defenders?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's such a compliment to Fred if you're pulling three defenders, because that means that two players are now wide open, and those two players could easily be Pascal, OG, and Scotty, or Gary when they're back. And so I'm thinking, like, yeah, of course, like, if you're other teams and you saw how the Suns guarded Fred VanVleet, this guy who's, you know, unstoppable right now in the league, but clearly got stopped a bit last night, at least contained. I will say the word contained, because he, at the end of the day, he didn't get completely stopped. You know, you're going to do what the best does, and you're probably going to copy something of the Sun system. But do I think it's effective when you have a full Raptors team? I don't think so. Cause now, you know, Fred VanVleet should just be the next assist machine next. Like that category is probably going to be taking a hike the next time we see them play off like that. So, I don't think it's going to be an effective strategy in the long term. Does it work right now with the Raptors maybe having a few injuries and having to rely on other players, other rotation players? Sure, yeah, Suns did a great job in adjusting for that. But long-term, I don't think so. I think the ball will be then passed to Pascal or somebody else. And if that's your game plan, if you want to leave Pascal open, that's your choice. But I know I personally wouldn't do that if I was a coach.
Yeah, and you know, I think you're absolutely right. The Raptors do have a couple of options here, especially if they're going to trap these pick and rolls where, you know, whether that's Kem, who I think is probably the best playmaker out of the true centers on the group, between Kem, Boucher, and Precious. Like, he's probably the guy who can make the next play and the next pass. Can also do a little bit of scoring, but of late, he really hasn't been looking to do too much of that. But as you mentioned, like, yeah, you could put Pascal in the two-man game. You could put Scotty in the two-man game. Those guys can really do something with the ball. So if teams want to play 4-on-3 against Fred, like, that's one of the nice things about the Raptors is that they have a starting five when everyone's healthy. They have a starting five with five guys all averaging 15 or more points. So it's not like the other guys on the team won't do anything. Now, last night, though, it was a little strange because looking at the box score again now, the Raptors made 8 threes total. OG had 4. Fred had 4. Nobody else on the team hit a three. That is a little bit concerning to me in terms of just you kind of do need more. I wouldn't say, like, this is, like, you know, something that's going to happen every game. I'm not expecting only two guys to hit threes. But moving forward, I do think that the Raptors, as much as they focus on getting length and athleticism and forwards on their team, they need to get some shooting as well. Because sometimes last night, I don't know about you, but it was kind of painful watching, like, Utah miss threes or, like, you know, the bigs get wide open threes. I think Ken was open, Precious was open late in the game. And the Suns literally weren't even like, yeah, that's fine. You guys can have that, you know? And that's where, if they want to get to that next level, everybody needs to be a bit of a threat.
The first thing I just thought of, like, yo, that's so rude.
It was rude. There was a play where there was like 5 seconds left on the baseline inbound. Kem just like, all right, I'm going to slide to the corner. And the Suns, they looked at him. They were like, yeah, that's cool, man. You want to pass it to him? No problem. No pressure on the pass. No closeout. Nothing. They were just like, let me just box out right here. And yeah, they were exactly right to do that. So
it worked for them, but is that going to work every game? I don't think so, because, you know, you could leave, you know, Utah Watanabe open for three how many times, and, you know, he's still an NBA player. He's going to hit at least a few of those eventually down the stretch. So happy it worked for them tonight. If they shot a higher three-point percentage, it would have been a completely different game. The Raptors would have gotten this game 100%. And so, you know, I would say they almost got lucky in the fact that Pascal was not hitting the three ball that well. You know, even though Van Vliet hit four, it was 4 for 10, and it could have been a better shot percentage there in some senses. OG Anunoby, like, you know, he was 4 for 13 from the three. I would almost be wondering, you know, OG, why are you even taking that many if it's not really falling that well? So, yeah, but I agree with you. I just think that it's not going to be an effective long-term strategy to leave, like, NBA players, Raptors specifically. However, it did point out the fact that, you know, the Raptors do need that true shooter. I think that's a piece of our team that is slightly missing. I think they're expecting that maybe more so out of Sofie Mihailuk coming off the bench. You know, he didn't even attempt a three last night.
But he attempted a Vince Carter-style putback dunk, which...
He did. He did.
Why? Why did he do that?
You know, some things are just unexplainable. But, you know, sometimes people need reminders. That's all I got to say. People need reminders to stay in some lanes. But, you know, I think that we're expecting a little bit more three-point shooting, maybe potentially from him. But they just didn't have it last night. I guess the legs weren't underneath them. So, and all, like, you know, they did perform pretty well, like, defensively for the Raptors. So maybe they're honestly just, like, tired coming off of the defense. Like, the Suns are still a really hard team to contain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Actually, so you touched on OG and the fact that he had, you know, on the box score, it looks like a decent game, 25 points on 9 of 20 shooting, 4 of 13 from 3. Obviously, the percentage could be better there. But, you know, he made a couple of plays, especially at the end. He hit a corner three. He had a driving layup, which I thought he got fouled on for an and-one, but the refs just didn't call that. That's fine. And I thought he did a really good job defending Devin Booker. Not as good of a job as the Raptors mascot. And we'll touch on that as well, because that storyline is hilarious. But, yeah, what did you make of OG last night? Because it felt like the Suns were double-teaming Pascal and they were triple-teaming Fred. They were ignoring pretty much everyone else. And then with OG, they were letting him kind of play one-on-one. So what did you sort of make of some of the results of OG being able to clear out on the block against a guy like Devin Booker or even against a guy like, you know, Jay Crowder or whoever? What did you make of his one-on-one game that he showed last night?
You know, I wasn't mad at it. You know, at the end of the day, he had 25 points. I think it's a game that he, like, one-on-one in the paint, you know, backing down and everything, is a game that I think that he's still developing. He's more of like an attacker type threat. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, OG Anunoby is so strong. I'm never mad at that matchup. If Devin Booker is covering OG or even on any switches at all, like, you know, OG's going to just naturally, he's going to be like the more physical player. I think that's what he was forced to do last night in a sense. And so, you know, that's just kind of his game. That's kind of like the role that he's playing on the Raptors outside of his incredible defense as well. So on the offensive end, when your primary guys are kind of like getting shut down, you know, if you're forced to use your physicality and be that guy that takes, you know, a bit more bumps and bruises and is not afraid to take it straight to the rim, like, that's his game. Like, that's what it is. I expect that more than I expect his three-point shooting. And so that's why the numbers, you know, like, leaving him relatively open on the three-point line, I guess that game strategy worked, because when you're attempting 13 three-pointers, then, you know, you're not probably using your effectiveness as much, or your size and your strength as much going inside. And so I think they actually held him. But yeah, I think he's best when he's driving and attacking.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for OG, sometimes he's so deliberate, right? Like, he likes to catch the ball, likes to face up, take his time, you know, assess what's happening on the weak side. Is the defender, second defender coming over and, you know, waiting for them to sort of like clear out the lane before he makes his move? And some of that's good, like knowing like when to go fast, when to go slow is important. But I feel like almost I like him more when he makes a direct move, because he's so strong and he's bigger than most guys. Like, so yesterday he was getting covered by Booker quite a bit, and I thought Booker really took the physicality to OG rather than the other way around. I was playing the third quarter where OG was just trying to like dribble and get to his right hand and maybe even just get to the right hand so that he can set up the crossover back to his left and then go to the baseline. But Booker was just in him. Like, he was, you know, two hands on him. Referees were kind of letting it go, whatever. I like the whistle last night too. It's like a playoff style whistle. And OG just really struggled with sort of getting to his spots, and the Raptors ended up turning the ball over. Like, I think for him, it's almost better if he just catches the ball and makes that immediate move immediately, because he's so fast. He's so strong that, you know, guys like a Booker, like they shouldn't really be able to contain him as much as they did last night. And so do you think that's kind of just inexperience for OG in a sense that, like, yes. I know he's obviously been in the league for 5-6 years now, but he hasn't been in this role where he's asked to be able to create as much as he is right now.
Exactly. And I think last night was the perfect like example of that, because when your other players are starting to get locked down and Fred VanVleet can't be that playmaker for you, you're forced to create your own shots and get other guys involved. But primarily, you're right. Like, yeah, Booker, you know, he was reaching. Let's be honest. He was reaching some of those. So in maybe some other games, those would have been called. But I am a fan as well when OG just gets it, because he's almost like a moving train that way. Like the moment he gets the ball straight to his hands and just goes, like his first step, when he beats the defender off the first step, there's no stopping him. Like, you, like, good luck without like a serious foul call. And so I think the hesitancy, maybe he was overthinking it a little bit. And that's where, you know, that's where he almost made Booker look good, when we all know that like OG is a stronger player in terms of, you know, coming off of a dribble or just like just in terms of physicality. But like when you're hesitant, now the defense gets set and, you know, now help side's coming. And so Booker feels confident that if he does reach, the other guys are dropping from the other side to cover OG getting to the rim. And now, you know, with the hesitancy again, if OG's driving to the rim, he's not going as fast as he would have if he just like caught the ball and just went straight at it, you know, attacking aggressively first. And so I think that's what we saw last night. Maybe a little bit of hesitancy once again, just not being the primary role of creating shots that we're used to seeing in terms of Fred and Pascal even. So it was new. You're right. It's inexperience for him in a sense. And I mean, hey, reps are important in this league, especially in the regular season.
Yeah, and you know what? OG's such an interesting guy, because like I think people are really expecting, especially based on like what he did in preseason stuff, like the talk was consistent, like OG and LB, you know, most improved. We saw that in so many prediction columns by not even people locally, but also, you know, who cover the NBA nationally. He has taken a step in his game. Like it's, you know, his percentages are dropping. Like he went from 48% shooting last year to 44%. I think some of that honestly is just the first two games he had this season where he looked so out of his depth. I think since then he's been a lot more steady, but he's up to 19 points per game. And for a third option, that's pretty in line with what you would expect from a third option. Like this is, for example, more points than Pascal in the year he won most improved. He averaged about 17 points that year as the third option behind Kawhi, and I guess Kyle was the second option. So, you know, it's like OG, he is taking the steps. And I think in these situations, like this is where he needs to sort of take games like last night, study the tape, and really continue to work on these things, because he's not going to get that many chances to clear out and isolate a lot of these games because of the fact that Fred and Pascal, when they're healthy, they're able to do what they do. But when teams load up on those guys, they need a third guy to sort of help and take on those responsibilities. And that's where you're kind of expecting OG to take another step. But what have you made of OG's progress overall as a player, just compared to like last year or even 2 years ago?
You know what? It's steady. Like, I can't even, like, you know, criticize him too harsh. And you're right. His field goal percentage did go down. But his points for, you know, considering all things considering, like, they dramatically went up. And he had that hip pointer injury as well. Like, that's not easy to come back from. Right. So you know that there's probably some, you know, finding your rhythm, finding your feet, getting back into game shape again, coming off of that as well. So there's just like some other things that we got to consider in the big picture. You're right. The first two games definitely hurt his percentages there. But, you know, if you look at, you know, like you talked about him being the third option. Well, this is, you know, more or less comparable, but Andrew Wiggins is about the third option on the Golden State Warriors, and he's dropping 18.6 points a game while OG's having 19 points per game. And, you know, Andrew Wiggins' percentage is only slightly better than OG Anunoby's. So if you, like, consider those two factors, like, yeah, you know, OG is in the correct role that he's in. He's steadily improving. You see also more, I don't want to say leadership, but, like, you know, he's taking more of a senior role on this team, and he's it's confidence. I think it's the confidence that has been growing. So he's not afraid to take his shots and find his rhythm in a game. It's just translating nicely. It's not one of those like, boom, who is this player all of a sudden, but it's like, okay, slow and steady wins the race. And that's kind of just OG Anunoby, who he is as a person too. Like, he's kind of quiet. Yeah. He's kind of subtle. Like, he's not going to give you everything so loudly or nothing, but you know, his work goes to show for everything that he's doing on the court, of course. And You know, I tweeted last night that the Raptors probably have the quietest big three in the league. Yes, you could argue potentially like a potentially a big four if you want to throw GTJ in there or Scotty Barnes, maybe interchangeable, if you will. But, you know, OG is part of that big three, and he is the quietest, probably one of the quietest players in the league that way. And so his growth has been consistent. You see it obviously in his numbers, like three seasons ago now, like 10 points per game last season, 15 points per game this season, 19. So, you know, if he takes another step before the end of this season, which I could totally see him doing, maybe even after All-Star, yeah, I wouldn't doubt he starts averaging closer to like the 22 point mark. So we'll see what happens. Cause like I said, he's coming off of that hip pointer injury, still finding his rhythm, still learning how to play with a full healthy Toronto Raptors team as well. So it's all translating slowly.
Yeah. And, you know, just, I wanted to confirm this. So I looked up the numbers. If you took out the first two games, which is not, you know, like, look, the whole season, you can't just take out bad games and then say what the numbers are. But first two games of the year, it was really awkward for him. He was like the go-to option. He clearly looked out of his depth. He shot 7 of 34 in those two games, which is clearly not what he does as a player. He just looks so awkward. He's turned the ball over too. If you just take out those two games, he's averaging 20 points right on the dot, 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.7 steals, 46% shooting from the field, 38% from three. He's shooting 80% from the free throw line. Like, there's improvements across the board for OG. And I think that exactly where the Raptors envision him is essentially as the third option, he's really giving you that type of production to go along with the great defense, which he did play really good defense on Devin Booker last night, but apparently not as good as defense as the mascot. What was going on? So were you at the arena last night?
I was not at the arena, but you didn't need to be at the arena to see what was going on. Okay. First of all, just real quick, I wish that we could always take out the bad games and just use the good game percentages. If we could just do that from here on out, that'd be great. Just skew everything.
Yeah. Well, if you take out all the bad games for OG, he might be averaging like 30.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we won't go through the entire Toronto Raptors roster and do that right now, but maybe on the next episode or something. Yeah, I mean, the mascot was the sixth defender on the court, clearly. What did you take away from the mascot?
So yesterday was a game where I finally went to one of these games, like the empty arena and stuff. It was super weird. I'm going to have a whole breakdown of this and just how surreal the experience is. Tomorrow, Alex has specifically requested that he's going to clear out and just ask me questions about what it was. But I'll say about the Raptor in particular. So one thing, I think it was caught on the broadcast, but the inflatable Raptor came out in the third quarter. I thought that was way more distracting. And the fact that it's a completely empty arena, they're piping in crowd noise, but it's really, really quiet in there. There's only like about 150 people in there, like at most. And that includes like security and everybody and camera staff and everything like that. The inflatable Raptor comes out in the third quarter, and he makes his way from one corner to the other corner. And that was hilarious. I think it actually like was caught on the broadcast camera. You just see this giant inflatable Raptor going across the screen. It was weird seeing it in person too, because it was clear that he wanted to come in and then like try to distract on the free throw there. There was a play, as you remember, when the Raptors used their challenge on the Devin Booker kickout against OG, which was successfully overturned. The inflatable Raptor was getting ready to troll Devin Booker then, because Devin was supposed to go into the free throw line until Nick challenged it. So literally the inflatable Raptor was like, I don't know how else to describe this, jiggling himself like up and down behind the basket with the inflatable Raptor. But then they overturned it, so no free throws. And then he left. It was super weird. And it's also really kind of scary when there's nobody else in there other than the players and then this giant inflatable Godzilla. It was quite odd. And then, what was that?
Oh, I was going to say, see, that's more distracting than, like, in my opinion, I think that's more distracting than an entire crowd yelling at you if you're an NBA player on the free throw, because you're used to that. But you're not used to one giant, like, ridiculously sized giant, too. Like, this is not just your standard little,
like... No, he's, like, two stories tall, easily.
Yeah, exactly. Staring you down and jiggling and wiggling every bones away. So, like, you know, it's that's distracting, if you ask me. So, did he do his job? I think the Raptor mascot did the best he could. But, yeah, it was more distracting coming in the third quarter. I was, like, processing that when I was watching it on the broadcast for, like, a hot, like, 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, wait, what happened in the game? I was still thinking about the Raptor.
Yeah, no, it was super funny. And honestly, the Raptor, I mean, he has a very difficult job right now. Like, what are you supposed to do to entertain for an empty arena, right? Like, what are you supposed to do? So, like, he's walking around. He's not doing that much in terms of, like, negative kind of stuff. Like, really, like, that one thing with the free throw line was the only thing he did. And it wasn't anything out of bounds whatsoever. Like, that's what every mascot does. It just so happens he's in an empty arena. I think Devin's actually cool with it, too. Apparently, him and the Raptor talked it out afterwards. You know, that's interesting to me. And that's kind of cool. But, yeah, it was just funny watching the Raptors during the course of the game because he doesn't have that much to do. And at one point, he's like, remember when remember the Celtics got mad because Nick Nurse in the bubble was standing in the corner and then Jason Tatum thought he was a player for some reason and kicked it out to him. Mm-hmm. And the Celtics were like, oh, that's you're cheating the game or whatever. That's essentially the spot that the Raptor was in the whole time. And the thing is, he was in one corner. And then Scotty Barnes was in the other corner, like on the Raptors bench. Scotty just wouldn't sit still. Like literally, I know he's out with the knee thing, but like he wasn't resting that knee. He was steady up the whole time, cheering. And at times it was like him and the Raptor like pointing to each other on the opposite corners of the court and kind of vibing there. But to be honest, like the Raptor did nothing wrong. Free the Raptor, okay? A Hall of Famer, and he did nothing wrong. So
I'm just happy nobody on the Suns team confused the Raptor for a player. Like Nick Nurse in the bubble. So
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what the Celtics were like. That guy, that 50-year-old guy right? over there in a polo is who I thought like, my teammate was. Like, well, really? You thought that was Daniel Theis?
He looks like he could be one of the players' fathers or something. Like, how are you trying to pass in the ball?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's just a turnover, man. Don't blame a turnover on a coach. Come on, man. That sounds weak. So, yeah. All right, Savannah. Appreciate you coming on as always. Fan of the program. I think that's a good spot for us to take a break. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you're listening to The Raptor Show on Sports FM 90 The Fan. When we come back, we'll be joined by another friend of the program, Vivek Jacob of Raptors.com. Welcome back to The Raptor Show on Sports FM 90 The Fan. I am joined in the second segment, almost by on every Wednesday, by Vivek Jacob of Raptors.com. Big V, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. El Clasico is on. Watching Real Madrid and Barcelona. I'm sure Alex is already steaming listening to this, but what's going on?
I was going to say, yeah, wow, you're giving me real-time updates here because I was just on the Reddit page, the Reddit soccer page, watching, Busquets, wow, that was a terrible bit of ball control from him. Very, very rare to see that from him. And then what a finish by Vinny. Vinny Jr., baby, the second best winger in the world behind Mo Salah right now. He's been ridiculous.
Wasn't looking too good yesterday, though.
Hey, man, listen. I don't need to see the ball. I don't need to worry about that. All right,
hope he comes back safe and healthy.
Listen, am I rooting against that? Am I rooting against specific teams in AFCON right now for the interest of Liverpool? Yes, I am selfishly, but we're not here to talk about that. We usually do that at the end of the show. We actually are here to talk about that. Let's be real. If we could, we could just turn this whole segment into just talk. But let's talk about the game last night. And first segment, we talked about Fred and Pascal and OG. We got to talk about Chris Boucher, who was having a huge resurgence, just turned 29 last night and got himself a Slim Jim sponsorship, which is perfect. Like in terms of like brand synergy, Slim Jim with Slim Duck makes perfect sense. And then he also celebrated his birthday, grabbing 16 rebounds to go along with 3 blocks and 13 points. What are you seeing from Chris Boucher right now? Because it is an entirely different player from what we saw earlier in the year, who we were all quite frustrated with, but of late, he's been carrying the team, especially coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go big picture in a second, but first off, last night, the offensive rebounding was just incredible. I mean, you think about how much the Raptors' offense was struggling to shoot the ball, and for him to, you know, keep alive possessions and just keep going at the glass. You pointed out how he was picking up, drawing loose ball fouls against some Suns guys, and that was important too. And so, yeah, in terms of the big picture, that all comes down to the energy and the focus that he's playing with, right? And he's not getting bogged down by what's happening with his three-point shot. And I think, you know, obviously, as much as we'd like that to really get going like it was last season, I think there is satisfaction to be drawn from the fact that, hey, last season, all through the first month of this season, what's everyone been saying? Hey, there's ways to impact the game outside of your scoring. And he has been doing that. He has been, again, getting on the glass. He has been proactive defensively where, you know, he's not getting caught out as much as he was before. And again, you know, you're asking a lot out of him in on games like this where you're missing Scotty, you're missing Gary. He's playing. He played over 30 minutes last night. Ideally, you know, if he's in a 20-ish minute role, it'll look even better because then he's in the perfect scenario. So the fact that you're getting this out of him when he's having to go long and go 30-plus minutes, and especially last night you look at the scenario with Pascal Siakam getting in some foul trouble, it's huge.
Yeah, and by the way, and you mentioned, man, the fact that he's got that sustained energy for that long. So he played, I think, all the fourth quarter. He played also at least 6 minutes of the third quarter. He came in off the bench. So we're talking about essentially an 18-minute stretch there for Boucher. And one of the last plays he makes in the game is the Raptors are in rotation. He scrambles. He closes down and Jay Crowder forces the miss. Unfortunately, the Raptors don't get the defensive rebound. Devin Booker runs it down. He kicks it back out to Crowder in the middle of the floor. And then Crowder swings it to the weak side to Chris Paul, who was wide open for three. Mm-hmm. And Chris Boucher, after contesting and going all out to close out on Crowder, somehow he's not even in the picture frame as Chris Paul's receiving the ball in his hand. And somehow he goes from that to blocking Chris cleanly in the air to save that possession. That kind of effort from Chris right now is so commendable. And after the game, he talked about he's watching some Dennis Rodman tape. And he said, quote, "I feel like I have the same energy and I relate to him a lot. I'm not scared of anybody. So whoever's in front of me, I just try to give it all my effort." Now, he also said that he was watching KD tape before that. So I got two parts of that question. Number one, kudos to whoever is showing, you know, Chris that Dennis Rodman tape. I think it's really working. But the other part
is
just
him and Pascal just watching it together.
Yo, I was going to say, who is the Rodman type? Because Alex was joking to me that, you know, we have Pascal Rodman. We have Chris Rodman. I would say Justin Champagne is a Rodman. So Justin Rodman, like, who is the real Rodman on this team?
I mean, in terms of, I think, just that knack for the ball, I'd probably go with Justin Champagne. But I think when you look at Pascal and Chris Boucher, I think they recognize, and obviously there have to have been conversations about, you know, you're playing with these types of lineups where everyone's 6'8", 6'9". You're going to need that extra effort on the glass. And even that defensive stand that you described, the tough part of that is as great as that possession looked. And even, you know, they essentially got two stops, but they can come up with the defensive board, right? And then you end up getting punished for it. So I think, you know, it's all needed right now. Everyone has to be active on the glass. Everyone should be watching Dennis Rodman tapes. And you know, I don't know how much Chris Boucher relates to his personality, but if he can relate to the energy, the effort, the intensity, I'll definitely take that for now.
Yeah, you know what? You're right, actually. Everyone should be watching Dennis Rodman tape because the Raptors are 25th in defensive rebounding percentage. If they had a Rodman type, like for real, that would not be the case. Yeah, I mean, the other part is, so he was watching KD tape before. What? I mean, do you feel like that kind of explains the season so far, where he was watching KD tape and trying to do some of that stuff, whereas now he's in a better role doing the Dennis Rodman kind of stuff? That surprised me, man.
I mean, yeah, I guess that would explain some of the stuff, and it would explain, you know, him even going through that huge 3-point slump and just continuing to jack up shots from the outside and saying, "Hey, I'll get there," you know, Slim Reaper. I think maybe he can leave that to KD, but I'm glad he's transitioned and figured out what his best role is. Obviously, you know, he talked about meditating before as well, and that seems to be helping. So, I think just a lot more controlled with his effort and a lot more discipline, and I think a lot more accountable too. There's times where, yeah, you know, you still see, obviously, the odd slip up from him, and he's the first to put up his hand and say, "My bad." And so I think that's an encouraging sign and shows good leadership as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been a great turnaround. I think, honestly, that stretch where the Raptors got, you know, real banged up and he was put into the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. And there was a stretch where he started 7 straight games. I think that really clarified his role, right? Like, okay, this is what Fred's going to be doing. This is what Pascal's going to be doing. Gary and OG. Like, all these guys are going to handle all the rest of the stuff in terms of the scoring and the playmaking. You know, where Chris can really come in and be effective is the fact that he can make these hustle plays. He can change the game with the way he's hustling. And I think it's really helped him. I mean, also part of it is just the minutes. But so if you compare the first 20 games of the season, actually the first 22 games of the season, Chris Boucher had never had more than 3 offensive rebounds in a game, right? Since then, in the last about 15 games or so, he's had a 5 offensive rebound game, another 5 offensive rebound game, 2 threes, a 4, another 2 fours, and then 9 last night. So his intensity is incredible of late. His deflections, and he's getting more steals and blocks and things like that. Settling into his role, and I think that is the major part in the bench turning it around right now. I think the bench still needs more help. He can't do everything, right? If he can knock down the threes consistently, like, damn, then he would really be doing everything. But that part is still not there for him right now. So they do need more help with the three-point shooting. And but right now, Chris is playing so well. Like, because I think going back to the earlier conversations that were had about Chris, it was like, okay, if you're not going to re-sign him, because he is coming up on a contract year right now, and if you're not going to re-sign him, and you know he's not performing well for you, or the fit's not right there, like maybe that's one of those guys you would consider as a trade target. But honestly, now the way he's playing and how important he is to the bench, do you have to sort of reconsider? Like, maybe you do consider, like, hey, we can hold on to his bird rights in the offseason and maybe keep him, especially if he stays within this role, or like, hey, I don't necessarily want to move him, because it would actually hurt the team in order to sort of flip him for, like, let's say, more shooting off the bench. Well, that's cool. You have more shooting off the bench, but all of a sudden you've now taken one of your strength off the bench off as well. Like, where do you stand on that at this current moment, seeing what Chris has done in the middle of the year to turn his season around?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's important to ask the question of, hey, does this hurt the team? Because the way he was playing that first month, you'd almost say, hey, any different player, you'd rather just even look at something different, not knowing whether it's going to be better, right? Because that's how much he was struggling. But now with the way he's playing, the fact that he is the most dependable guy off the bench, you have to look at it and say, okay, is the return going to be something that gives us something we need, gives us something that, you know, maintains what we already have? Those are the questions you have to ask now that you weren't necessarily asking before. So I think that's good on Boucher for changing that narrative, changing that conversation. And, you know, hopefully there's other guys who can come along with the bench. Obviously, Precious, we've talked about his defense before and that picking up. And his hustle has been pretty good as well. Justin Champagne might be, you know, the second or third most dependable guy off the bench right now. So I think that's where you look at the situation and say, hey, you know, when you look at those names and what Boucher has done this season specifically with his outside shot, there's no real three-point shooting coming off the bench.
Yeah, and that's why you have this conversation. Like, you really do have to think about balancing the roster. And I think if you do move Chris, then you have to ask yourself the question, who is going to be able to come in and step in that role? I think Precious can do it to some extent. I think Justin, honestly, can do it to some extent. But clearly, Chris is ahead of those guys right now, because we haven't seen this type of effort from either of those two guys, anything close. We haven't seen, and don't forget, Chris had that 28-19 game, like, a few weeks ago, too, right? So there's the level that he can change the game right now. And it's really encouraging, because before I felt like he wanted to change his game with his offense coming off the bench. But clearly he can change his game by hustling and making all these defensive plays as well. And I think that's what makes Chris unique. We also got to talk about, in terms of the lack of shooting. So clearly this team really misses Gary Trent Jr. Like, he misses two games here, and the Raptors barely can get a three going. And it feels like everyone is just so stressed offensively. Last night, only 2 Raptor players made threes. Okay, so you definitely needed Gary back on the floor. Hopefully he's going to be good, and it doesn't seem like anything serious. Seems like a game-to-game situation for him. But, is it kind of surprising to you, like, based on how the season has gone, like, how much the Raptors have needed Gary Trent Jr.?
I would say, in terms of his three-point shooting, no. Just because when you look at the roster, it's him, OG Anunoby, and Fred VanVleet as the dependable three-point options, right? Mm. If Boucher was shooting like he was last season, then sure, you can include him in that list. But there is no one else that you would look at on that team and say, yes, that is someone that when the ball is kicked out to, or just in general, when they're rising up for three, you absolutely expect that to go in. So, in terms of the three-point dependability, he is in that trio of guys that you depend on. Overall, the extent to which they've needed him is all because of his effort level and what he's brought on both ends of the floor. His shot selection has been excellent. and everything has come within the flow of the offense. Like, even when he's gone on those sort of scoring runs, it's come when the Raptors have needed it, right? Like, they go through a little bit of a lull, and then you get it to Gary, and he goes on his own run, and he keeps you alive for a stretch, right? And that's probably something that they really could have used in last night's game.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's especially important because he has no backup help behind him. It's not like he can be out of the game and someone else can step into that role. Like, even we saw earlier in the season, obviously the Raptors are way better with Pascal in the lineup. But even with Pascal, even with him being so good, the Raptors actually do have some depth at that position where OG was able to, you know, scale up his scoring. You know, Scottie was able to do his thing. Like, the team was able to sort of at least adapt to be functional around them. I think when you look at the guard play on the team, if Gary misses a game, or if, God forbid, Fred misses a game, this team has nobody coming in to support them off the bench in terms of the guards. We saw last night Svi and Yuta playing the two-guard position. Yuta gets a surprise start coming off of COVID. I understand that a little bit. Clearly, he's rusty after missing 2 weeks. Svi, I don't even know with him anymore, but 22 minutes from those two guys, 0 points from the shooting guard position in the NBA. They're not even asked to create any offense. They're just being asked to catch and shoot, and they're not even doing that. And I don't know. Is there any sort of salvage? Is there something salvageable with Svi here? Like, is he going to turn it around? Or do you see it as just like bad luck, or is it just something where the Raptors absolutely need to go get some help outside the organization?
I think they've got to prove it, because I think when I look at both of them, it's the non-corner threes that have been the problem. So, for example, when you look at Svi on the season, he is shooting 44%. On corner threes, but just 26% on non-corner threes. You look at Yuta Watanabe, 48% on corner threes, 22% on non-corner threes. So with both those guys, it's, hey, if a defense knows that, hey, those are the spots where you want to let them shoot and be comfortable with them shooting, then that's what they're going to give you, right? And I think, in general, I think this is one of the things, and this is probably getting a bit away from Svi and Utah, but overall, you know, watching that game against the Suns, even, you know, we saw this happen against the Jazz as well. The soft spots that those two opponents conceded to the Raptors, I don't think they were able to recognize them right away. And they didn't attack them as quickly as they should have. And that kind of weighs on you as the possession goes on. And specifically for Utah, I thought there were times where he was even matched up against Devin Booker and he was able to get by him on the drive and he'd go to the rim and then was sort of intimidated. And, you know, Yuta Watanabe was going to the rim like as if Yuta Watanabe was waiting for him. And I think he's got to go up there with more confidence and just really, you know, get that respect offensively, because this is something that he talked about at the beginning of the season as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, look, I wish Yuta would have that kind of confidence. And I think that's where the rust probably came in. Because, like, you got to imagine the conditioning, not doing much for 2 weeks, just sitting there, you know, probably having ramen by himself. Like, it's tough, man. Maybe have ramen with a friend sometime. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think with Svi, like, that's where the Raptors need to probably get just more production from that spot. And that's probably where you got to get outside help. I mean, look, Svi last night, he had the same shooting chart as Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because
it's that's tough. That was very tough. That's very, very tough, bro.
it's to the extent where I have wondered, you know, as well as Gary has played, can you get Ken Burch into that starting lineup, say, when this team is fully healthy, and bring Gary off the bench where you'd knock Svi out of the rotation? You know, and so you have, like, OG at the two.
You just don't have enough guards, though, still.
You don't, but, I mean, I feel like it still just spread things out a little bit better, right? Yeah. And I think it's something that might be worth considering if Svi can't turn it around. I mean, yeah, like, realistically, like, even now, I just went back to check. Even last season, he was only, you know, 33% on non-corner threes. 18-19 season with the Lakers, he's 24% on non-corner threes. So there's no real reason for him to have a reputation as a shooter.
Yeah. Damn. All right. That's tough. I guess we're not getting Svi on the podcast anytime soon. it's unfortunate. But hey, last guy. So we are going to have Justin Champagne on. And Champagne was a guy I wanted to highlight just a little bit here. Man, 10 minutes. He comes into the game, gets 5 offensive rebounds, gets a steal. That steal was against Chris Paul trying to dribble against him. And he picked Chris Paul, and the Raptors were able to go out another way in transition. Like, I like this kid, man. He's got a real great instinct for the game, and he's got a great attitude. He knows his role. He comes in and takes the right shots for him. He goes down to 905. Obviously, the life is a two-way player. He's going to go up and down, but I like what I'm seeing from Champagne. I think Nick does too, right?
I love what I'm seeing from Champagne. I think he's definitely, as the roster is currently constructed, I definitely think he's a rotation piece. I think he gives you something unique, something different. He gives you those offensive rebounds, those extra possessions that the Raptors need. And defensively, he's been solid too. So, you know, again, you go back to Summer League and Fred VanVleet talks about, hey, you know, I watched those games. I saw what Justin was doing and, you know, he could kind of see a path for him. And that tells you something. So I think, you know, we talked about Nick liking him. If Fred, the current leader of the franchise, likes him too, there's probably a good chance that he's going to stick around.
Yeah, absolutely. And not even stick around, man. Nick's talking about, like, hey, we might put him in the rotation. And when you look at his minutes, Champagne has consistently gotten into the game. So obviously the Raptors haven't had their full roster in a couple of these games, so whatever. And somebody's going to blow out, so he comes in with the third unit. But he does something when he comes in the game. Like, it's consistent that he gets in the offensive glass. Like, Champagne, going back to his last 9 games in a row, he's come in and gotten at least a 1 offensive rebound. And I'm obviously, 1 is a small tally, but some of these games, he's played 4 minutes, 5 minutes in a game, and he comes in and he makes sure he's on the offensive glass. It's actually, it's kind of incredible. He might have more offensive rebounds on the season than defensive rebounds, you know? Like, and that has to just, like, that's really impressive to me. And let me actually just make sure I have that total right. Yeah, 27 offensive rebounds to only 14 defensive rebounds for Justin. That is super rare.
That's amazing. You know? And that's his role, right? Like, obviously no one's going to drop a play for him. So you want to get the ball, go get it off the glass. And,
yeah,
you know, he's humble. He's just out here trying to carve out a spot in this league, a spot on this team, and he's going to do whatever it takes. And, you know, just to finish off the point on Champagne, like, when we talk about this team having 3 dependable shooters, a few of the guys you kind of just hope will give you something, right? Like, Pascal, that's the one I'd say you're still hoping that he continues to ascend with his 3-point shot. You look at Chris Boucher, you hope that he gets it going. Off the bench, specifically, you're looking at Svi. You're looking, again, at Boucher. You're looking at Malachi Flynn, if he gets an opportunity. Those are the guys that, if they were making shots, they've got a real case for the rotation. But when they're not making shots, then it's like, hey, why not give Justin Champagne a look? Because he's giving you all those other things. Utah's in that mix too.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of these guys are interchangeable. And honestly, I think whichever guy can make a 3 the most consistently will end up getting those minutes. But, you know, I guess the Raptors do have some in-house options to look at before they move ahead to the trade deadline in about a month or so. Hey, last thing before we go, we did mention, you know, the score. Obviously, it was 1-0 first up to Vinny, but now it's 1-1. Luke DeJong with a very scuffed finish off a great cross from a low cross from Dembele. Yeah, you have any thoughts on Luke DeJong? I know you support.
I'm a Dutch fan.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, it's been kind of sad looking at the strikers since Robin van Persie left. I mean, it has been. The Dutch usually have a tradition of great strikers, and ever since van Persie left, there's kind of been a void. I mean, it's kind of, you think about the Raptors too, how much they've been spoiled at the center position, at the point guard position, right, in terms of depth. And now, so those are the 2 spots. Like, who's it going to be outside of Fred? Who's it going to be at the center position after all those years with Serge and JV and Marc Gasol? And it's kind of funny how that plays out.
I can't believe you tied Luke DeJong back to the Raptors. That's an association I would like to avoid in the future. So, V, thank you for coming on. Appreciate you. Go follow Vivek at Vivek M. Jacob on Twitter and read all your work and everything that you do. So that does it for us today. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. And please rate and review our show. Thanks once again to Savannah Hamilton and Vivek Jacob, to our board producer, Dylan Brown. And we will talk to you tomorrow.